are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
I personally don't believe money will get you a better education, and it probably shouldn't, in fairness.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Mark Woodland, founder of software and technology company Our Explore, which automates administration tasks so teachers can focus on teaching and their students. In today's podcast, we'll be discussing how Mark turned from a soldier to a coder, the importance of continued learning and leadership, and how automation can reduce teachers' workloads.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am interviewing Mark Woodland, founder and CEO of Our Explore. Mark, have I got that name correct?
Yeah, Explore, X-P-L-O-R. I know it's not a waste on us how we spell it, but we're in education, we can't spell.
Okay, and could you just introduce listeners to kind of what you do, a little bit of background about yourself?
Yeah, Explore's in software and technology. We try to automate a bunch of administration tasks so teachers can teach and focus on the children. So we spend all our time trying to support the teacher and make sure they can get back to what they do really, really well, which is education.
Okay, and can you, I sense you're not from England. Could you describe your education background and maybe the kind of path that you followed through school, high school, university to where you are now?
Yeah, it's a weird story. My mother was a school teacher. She did that through her whole career. She started off as a kindergarten teacher and eventually became a school principal. So 20, 30 years she spent teaching. Eventually she retired and bought a childcare centre, or the equivalent of a daycare or nursery here in Australia, thinking that her passion was teaching and that's what she'd be able to do for the rest of her life.
Whereabouts in Australia is that?
In Melbourne. Okay. So I'm not sure how familiar, but yeah, Melbourne's sort of the sporting capital of Australia. And so I was in the army. I went from school to uni, didn't do too well in uni. It wasn't really the place that I was excelling. So I left uni, joined the Australian Defence Force and the Australian Army. And I was listening to my mum sort of call me every afternoon saying how much she wasn't teaching anymore and she was doing all the administration to run a nursery or a childcare centre, which was chasing fees, chasing enrollments, documenting what was happening.
And what period of time in terms of year, what year was she as a head teacher?
So she retired in 2010 and bought her childcare centre in 2010. So from a technology point of view, that's when the first iPad came out.
Right.
So that just puts everything in context.
Yeah. Okay. And how long was she in her role as a headship before she kind of maybe had that moment?
She probably did 5 odd years as a principal of a school and then retired and then she was in the as a business owner, a childcare operator, for all of 6 months before she realised, oh dear, what have I done? And I was listening to her talk to me every afternoon saying how hard it was.
Yeah.
And the best I could offer was leave the Defence Force and I will be your receptionist, I'll do the paperwork, you do the teaching, and let's try and save this business. And that's how I discovered early years, that's how I fell in love with education, not because of the paperwork,
but
because there's a thousand ways to do it better, which meant I selfishly didn't have to be there.
So then that led to our Explore, essentially.
Yeah, and that was the birth of Explore. And then from there, I approached an app developer and said, look, I got this idea, what do you think? He quoted me a stupid amount of money that I couldn't afford.
Yeah.
So I wrote the app myself, taught myself how to code, and built a platform that allowed all the automation of administration, the logging and tracking of children's health and learning, and then the communication between the educator and the parent.
Fantastic. Can you tell us more about the app then? Can you tell us a bit more about what it can do?
Yeah, so the platform does three key things. From a service point of view, it manages and automates everything from your digital attendance. So when parents sign in, sign out, it manages all your government benefits, all your payments. It manages your rostering, your timesheets, and your ratios, and it does that all automatically. From an educator's point of view, it provides the tools that you can do your cohort tracking and a whole series of other things, documenting children's learning with the learning outcomes and the different frameworks. And then from a parent's point of view, it allows them to open up that parent engagement. They can have those communication with the educator and they can continue that learning at home, which is really, really powerful stuff when you see parents on the weekend doing the things that the educators taught their children during the week. So it's this real personalized learning that comes out of using this technology, because you know exactly how the child is performing is a tough word, but you know what the child's interests are and how they're sort of what they're actually interested in and what they want to learn. So really powerful stuff.
How many schools and countries, locations are using your software?
Yeah, so we've got 3,000 services globally. We're in Australia, in the UK. We're eyeing off different countries around the world, but right now we're in Australia and UK.
Okay, great. And you got I hope you've got a good team around you, not just doing this yourself, obviously.
No. It's one of the toughest lessons I've had to learn, which is just letting go and figuring out what you're really good at and focusing on that, and then hiring the best people around you to support you and let them do what they're really good at.
So how many employees approximately is your business now?
We're about 70-odd. Okay. And then there's teams across the world.
What a great story. So I'll go back to my original question, kind of stemming back to when your mum had this light bulb moment. I obviously use technology in my own school leadership, but could you just explain to listeners how it actually saves them, helps them reduce their workload?
Yeah, so from an educator point of view, there's a lot of documentation. I'm not telling you anything new, but there's a lot of reporting and understanding children where they're tracking. So from an educator's point of view, this digitizes everything and keeps it in one central place. So you can quickly take a photo or video, and video is very, very powerful in comparison to a photo. And video also opens up different language barriers, so you can speak to what the child is learning, not just write to what the child has learned. And it engages parents in a different way. It's more present than the past. But one can take in that documentation or that observation, it's stored it on the child's profile, on the educator's profile, and then it opens it up for collaboration, and other educators can tag that learning with different things. They can build upon those or scaffold the different learning environments and things like that based on what the child's interests are and use that. And then the parent engagement comes in. So from a time-saving point of view, it's really just collating everything in one spot and allowing educators to go back and reflect on the different types of learning that's happening, and then the child can work hand-in-hand with the educator and the parent.
Yeah, I'm just flicking through your site as we talk. I can see our learning story document looks like it kind of gathers, like you said, video, audio, text and images, and it builds up a nice profile of their child's day at school, I guess. So I guess with those 3,000 schools, you've got a huge amount of teachers and parents and pupils globally using this. A ballpark figure of impact on kind of pupils around the world? Have you got a number of kids that this now reaches?
Users, we're rapidly approaching around that 700,000 mark. So that includes teachers, children, parents, and service owners, so total users on the platform. But again, there's users that are still on the platform but just not using the software because they've left their school or their setting and have gone somewhere else. So there's a lot of impact and influence still to be done.
No, it's a great story. I look forward to you telling me when you reach the 1 million mark. Hopefully not too far away. So what would you like to see change in education from your experience, you know, with your mum, now in the kind of ed tech education sector? Is the one thing that's driving you crazy?
Yeah, look, I always hate commenting. I think teachers do an incredible job, and it's tough. It's really tough. But I do think we need to get back to the personalised stuff, and that's all very well and good saying that, but how do we do that and how do we understand that? I'd love to see different schools built that focuses on the more of the soft skills, so more of that entrepreneurship stuff that we all crave, being problem solving and things like that.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer that if you have children running the tuck shop or the school canteen, they're probably going to learn more about economics when their friend hasn't got a sausage roll on time than they would in a 45-minute economics class. So that more practical, hands-on life skills stuff is what I think there's a massive opportunity which is not tapping into.
There are,
and that's a generalised statement, I'm sure.
I mean, some of the schools I've visited, I've seen tuck shops in primary schools and kids are actually leading it themselves, but it's not everywhere, and that tends to disappear in high school as the focus slowly kind of increases towards a kind of exam performance. So with that, what's your favourite part about working in education? So with all the challenges...
Yeah, it's a good question. I guess the most favourite part, and excuse my voice, I'm slowly or quickly dying. But I get super excited, and it doesn't bother me if it's a child or it's an educator or whatever. But when you see someone have that sort of light bulb moment and they understand something, is really, really, really special to witness. And I see that in my own team members. I see that in children. It's learning.
Yeah.
And it's the true form of learning. So I get excited when I can teach someone something new, be it technology or something.
Yeah. It is probably the thing that I think most people would say, particularly in teaching, is when a kid finally gets it and you see that moment on their face. Could you give us any insights into people in leadership in business that you've worked with? Anything that you've learnt you can pass on to people listening?
Yeah, I mean, I'm learning every single day, and I think that is probably the key takeaway, that you don't know everything, and you never really lose, or you should never really lose that hunger to be better or to improve. We call it a growth mindset, but it's just learning at the heart of it. But I've met many great leaders and wish that I had their skill set, but again, my ambition is, well, how do I learn that, and how do I be better each day? So that's sort of the mindset I go into it with.
Play to your own strengths, so to speak.
Yeah.
And just in terms of your experiences in the UK and Australia, are there any common or very different things, or are we all generally trying to do the same things? Anything different?
It's definitely different and similar at the same time. There's the world's most vague answer. But But, you know...
Someone made a comment to me the other day about the private system in Australia, and I tweeted out a link to an article about the private school system in England that is probably fueling social mobility problems rather than decreasing it, when actually there's quite a bit of research to show that the quality of teaching is no better. Whether you're getting value for money or not, it's essentially if you can afford to, you're choosing to have your kids... removed from, dare I say, disadvantaged kids. What are your thoughts on that? Someone responded with that comment about the Australian system. I've been to Australia, but I don't know very much about the education system. But is that does that ring true?
Yeah, short answer is yes, but I caveat that response with there's great public schools, there's great private schools, there's bad private schools, and there's bad public schools.
Yeah.
What it comes down to is the teachers in that school and the school leadership, of how well do they encourage those teachers either to take risk, which is going to impart that risk-taking to the children, and what is that mindset? It comes back to culture and the values of the school. I've seen terrible private schools.
Yeah.
And I've seen great private schools, but... I personally don't believe money will get you a better education, and it probably shouldn't, in fairness.
Okay, good answer. And it's complicated, as we know. I'm going to move on to my kind of ending quick fire round, so you need to be ready with a quick response,
Mark. Yeah.
okay, here we go. So what project are you currently working on?
A lot.
Yeah, give me one.
Demand-driven occupancy.
Okay. What book are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading Bad Blood, a Silicon Valley book about Theranos, the startup.
Okay. Hardest thing you did as a soldier?
A jungle warfare training camp called Tali.
Great. Breakfast, tea or coffee?
Neither.
Juice?
Energy drink.
All right, good. Dream job if you weren't a soldier. Red Bull, okay. Dream job if you weren't a soldier or in ed tech, what would you have done instead?
I was studying law. I'm not sure if that's a dream, though.
Right, okay. Greatest achievement?
I think exploring my daughter and my family.
Okay, nice. Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
I'm biased, but Daniel Petrie would be great. He's a venture capitalist that's invested in my company and has a lot of insight.
Okay, nice. Favourite spot in London?
My office is on Chiswell Street, so I'm not sure if that's a spot. But
right, okay.
I know that.
If I'm walking past, I'll give you a shout. And final question then, where can listeners find out more about you, blogs, books, websites, things like that?
Yeah, if you jump onto our website or follow me on Twitter, which is just Mark A. Woodland, and then you'll be able to find everything that relates to us.
Yeah, and your website address?
Is ourexplore.com.
And that's an XPLOR, isn't it? So
yeah, XPLOR.
Okay, great. I'll put all that on the podcast and on the site for you. So thanks, Mark, for your time. It's been great to catch up with you last, and hopefully we can catch up in person. So thanks for your time. You're listening to Teacher Toolkit, everyone. You can find out more on our website and follow on social media using the hashtag TTKitPodcast. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.